It's April 28th, I believe, and we have a very light agenda today, so we can move right ahead. First, I'll call on Representative Jensen to make a motion on a memorial.
On the Trojan Bill.
Trojan Bill, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that the committee request that the legislation be drafted related to the future assumption of obligations related to the closure of Trojan Nuclear Power Plant that are currently the obligation of Portland General Electric.
Okay. I'd like to, I need to open the hearing first. So we will open the hearing on the memorial for Cecil Johnson. And do I hear any objections?
You have a motion. You have a motion before the committee. I think we need it. Do you need a work session? You opened the committee. Do you need to open a work session to do that?
No, I think you can just invite her up to explain the bill before we do
that. That's what I'd like to do. Libby, would you come?
That would be really good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Libby Henry, representing the Eugene Water and Electric Board. Currently, Trojan is owned by three parties. EWEB owns 30%, PG owns 67.5%, and Pacific Core owns 2.5%. The plant is decommissioned, so it is basically a nuclear waste storage site. When it was built, it didn't really have a site certificate that went with it. What came with it was a letter from Tom McCall saying, welcome. So the regulatory oversight on Trojan is basically in rules at the Siting Council. There's also a license that goes with Trojan with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and there's a Trojan operating agreement between the three parties. This bill has nothing to do with selling PG in terms of is it more or less saleable. What it says is, and our concern is, particularly if the assets were to be broken up, that whomever purchases PGE, be it a party or number of parties, they would have this 67.5% liability, which means they would also manage this storage facility, and with it they would get the decommissioning fund, which is $100 million. So that obligation goes along. Odds are the Nuclear Regulatory Commission would want that to happen, our Siting Council would want that to happen, but because this is so up in the air, we don't know what's going to happen with PGE. We thought, as an insurance policy for us, we would put this bill in. This bill has been talked about, this language, with the working group. With the working group, AOI, Industrial Customers and Northwest Utilities, Citizens Utility Board, all the utilities, the Siting Council, Bonneville, the Public Utility Commissioner have all seen the language. It went into Senate Bill 1008. I'm not hopeful about Senate Bill 1008, so, and I've always wanted a freestanding bill. So there's no opposition to it that I know of. It was drafted by our attorney and bond counsel, who I would bring in to talk to you at the time of the hearing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative?
If I may, I just would like to ask one question. And why wouldn't we include those other two owners, previous owners of Trojan? You know, Pacific Corp is a viable corporation, at least right. As far as we know today. We have no idea what we'll know tomorrow.
Right.
And we have no idea when somebody might come in. I'm just curious why we might not want
to. I called Kevin Lynch at Pacific Corp and said, for your 2.5%, would you like to join me in working the bill? He said, I'll call you back if we're concerned about it, and he didn't. So that was what I heard from Pacific Corp. Their lobbyist has seen the language. Their lobbyist has been present at these working group meetings on Senate Bill 1008 that I just referred to. And they're fine with it, but evidently don't feel a need to work it. The percentage is so small.
Mr. Chair, if I can continue with it. But the thing is that this speaks directly to acquiring PGE and to the Portland General Electric obligation or responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
There are some other owners of the Trojan.
Yeah.
And they are not covered here, so that if any, they're not included, so that if anybody came in to buy them or portions, if they decided to sell out their assets or something, there's no coverage there as to what might happen with any other owner, utility owner of the Trojan plant. And I just was curious why that had not been part of the bill, or and I'm not smart enough to know whether it should be or not. It's curious.
Chair, Representative Jensen, the other two utilities aren't for sale, I guess. And the other thing is that when there's a transfer, and maybe I can shed some light on this. When PGE was looking at remaining PGE, and there were other, like for instance, when Enron purchased it, there was no change in the administration of the plant. Therefore, there would be no transfer of the site certificate or any of the other governing documents over that plant. Same with Pacific Core, when they were purchased by Scottish Power, there was no change in the administration. So it was thought that the financial viability remained in place and the actual management on site of Trojan, as far as PGE is concerned, would remain with PGE. So those have only been those are the only prior circumstances with regard to sale that we've ever considered, and didn't think to say if EWEB were sold, it's owned by the citizens of Eugene. I don't think that would happen. And Pacific Core was, you know, fairly recently purchased by Scottish Power. So we only looked at the PGE piece of this, particularly since the PUC turned down the petition for the purchase by Texas Pacific Group. We don't know what the fate of PGE will be, and that's the kind of the root of our discomfort on this. So that was why we only addressed PGE.
Mr. Chair, just continuation. I remember a time not too many years ago when we would have said the same thing about Enron and PGE, that we thought Enron was a or we were at least told Enron was a viable company and that PGE was on solid ground. And of course, times changed rather dramatically and rather quickly for us on that. And I don't follow Pacific Corp or Scottish Power that much to know whether I'm comfortable with them or whether I'm not comfortable with them. But it's just a concern I had why the bill might not want to include the other companies who currently own part of the liability of the Trojan plant.
Mr. Chair, I will certainly share that with our legal counsel and see if there's something he would find useful or an explanation that would meet your concern.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thanks for explaining this. That actually helps me understand this. You listed a number of people that you consulted with in drafting this.
Yes.
I didn't hear either the City of Portland or representatives of the Mutual Corporation, both of which are making serious proposals relating to PGE, and I wanted to know if you made an effort to consult them.
Mr. Chair, yes, the City of Portland does have that language. I just omitted them in my list. And the mutual people, of course, have seen the language because it went into Senate Bill 1008. So all parties have seen the language that would have an interest in it that I know of. And they had no objection. And according to them, if their plan were to go forward, there would be no issue regarding liability and picking up that percentage share of plant and percentage share of the decommissioning fund. So, yes, everybody has seen it. Does that answer your question?
Well, it does, but what I have heard is that since it's in Senate Bill 1008, they perhaps give that a higher probability of becoming law than you do, and that their neutrality was based on it's already on its way to become law, rather than on a standalone basis feeling comfortable with this language. But that may be a conversation we have if the bill ever does come forward for a hearing.
Okay. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that this hadn't become an issue because the assets hadn't been transferred, but in the Texas Pacific deal, which worked its way through the process for a long time before falling apart, I assume that the issue of the Trojan liability was addressed in that. How was it addressed in that deal?
It was addressed in that deal similar to, pardon me, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, similar to the answer I just directed to Representative Jensen. When Texas Pacific would have taken over, PG still would have remained the managing partner of the plant. And since there's no change in hands in terms of the managing partner of the plant, the liability and the decommissioning fund would have remained with TGE, maybe under the name of Texas Pacific, but the actual on-site work, and this is what, you know, we want to make sure that nuclear waste is cared for. PG does a good job of that, by the way. We want to make sure that stayed intact. So that's my understanding. That was I was advised that by the Siting Council. They said as long as there wasn't a change in actual administration on site, they didn't see a need to transfer the site certificate. So it was considered covered. My best, and my attorneys can answer that better than I.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair. I'm not totally following the language of your bill, but is there something in this that would allow the total liability to transfer to the entity that took over PGE,
yes,
letting Pacific Core and you off the hook?
No. That's it says proportionate share. It'd be proportionate share of the liability and of the assets, which is the decommissioning fund right now is at about $100 million. So substantial assets that go with it. And the idea is that the federal government is supposed to find a nuclear repository for this waste by 2018. Mm-hmm. In the event they do not, then the assets, the rates could be increased on all of our behalf to continue to pay into the decommissioning fund to make sure that on site the plant is cared for responsibly.
So final clarification, Mr. Chair. So the language, and I guess the fourth line from the bottom that says intergovernmental entity or person shall assume all or a proportionate share of all Portland General Electric's Trojan obligations. It seems a little ambiguous to me whether this is talking about transferring the total liability or obligations, I guess is the word used in here.
Okay.
Why does it say all or a proportionate share of
Mr.
all?
Mr. Chair, our big concern about this is not one entity purchasing PGE or PGE redistributing the stock. Our concern was several entities. And if it were to be broken up into several pieces, no individual party may be capable of taking on that obligation. So you would break up the obligations proportionally among the parties that would become these new utilities. And although that's very unlikely, we wanted to address that in the bill in the eventuality that would happen. So if it's one utility, it would pick up the 67.5% liability and the decommissioning money. If it were two, it would be half of that proportionate share.
I might be able to help clarify this because I had the same question looking at the language, but if you look to the next line, it says all or a proportionate share of PGE's Trojan obligation. Not all of the Trojan obligation. So it's, if you buy all the stock, you get all the obligation. If you buy all the assets, you get all the obligation. If you buy a portion of either, you get that same portion of the obligation. And we'll get a chance to parse this even more if it comes back as a bill.
Thank you. I apologize for being late, and I'm not sure this may have already been asked, but I wonder if a bill like this can be effective against the decision of the bankruptcy court. And I don't know the answer.
I really need to bring my attorney in for some of these questions. There are so, Mr. Chair, members, there's so many unknowns about the transfer of the site certificate, what the NRC would say, or the operating agreement. This is just a fail-safe for us in the event there's any question.
Yeah.
So
Thank you for informing us to this date.
Can I get one more?
Yes, yes, we do. Follow-up.
Thank you. Just very, very quickly. I think, regardless of what the question I just asked, maybe a bit of a red herring, I think it's useful to get the intent of the legislature as a representative of the people of Oregon on the record on this sort of situation, regardless of whether our law would be effective or not. Against the bankruptcy court. So really, it doesn't really matter what the answer to my question is, I think.
Great. Representative Lou.
Thank you. Ms. Henry, you've passed out language that you said your council drafted, but this is not an excerpt actually from Senate Bill 1008. So Ledge Council didn't draft these words. This is from your bond council.
I do have Ledge Council's draft in 1008, and it is a freestanding section in 1008. It's right at the end
of the bill. Verbatim, this
yes.
language?
Yes.
Well, then maybe we need to go talk to Ledge Council.
I'm checking up this.
But thanks.
Hmm. Ledge Council spoke with our attorneys. They worked it out together.
Pretty ambiguous.
Senator Lim, we are considering moving a draft for legislative council to draft up the Trojan obligations for the Trojan nuclear plant in case of its sale.
Okay.
In case of PG&E's sale.
PG&E.
PG&E? Okay. There's one. There is
that's
a PG&E in San Francisco.
Company.
Right.
They're not, we're not selling it.
I used to pay my bills to them.
Yeah.
All right. Let's let Representative Lynn get the feeling for where we are. Or even
it looks like we might need another copy of this. I don't see one in Senator Lynn's staff.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll take a recess for a minute. This draft, and we have a motion for the draft. Any further discussion? If not, clerk, call roll.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
Chair votes aye. The motion having been passed, we'll bring that back on the schedule next week.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just wanted to indicate on the record that my vote was to allow the bill to be printed, but does not indicate support or opposition on my part.
And might I just ask, Ms. Henry, if you would get together with Representative Nolan and Rosenbaum, I think they may have some suggestions for you on the drafting of this.
I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Next, we are going to change our schedule just a little bit and hear House Bill 2507, and we'll call Representative Greenlee to testify again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mitch Greenlee, State Representative from House District 33. I'm back before you. I hope we'll meet for the last time on this bill. You have in front of you the Dash 3 amendments, which are the Dash 2 amendments plus five words, I think. As I reported last time, the Dash 2 amendments are the result of a work group, and we have, I think, total work group agreement on how to deal with the question of sodium azide-containing airbags. The basic notion is that the airbags need to be deployed or removed from any vehicle before the vehicle is wrecked or dismantled. They need to be, if they're removed from a vehicle, they need to be deployed within 7 days unless they're properly stored by a motor vehicle dealer, an automobile repair facility, or a wrecker, and that the violation of this is a violation. A Class D violation. The other, the section 2 of the bill talks about possession of airbags. It's not only a question now in section 2 of organizations carrying it, it's also there have been a lot of reported theft of airbags from cars, and section 2 would make it a Class C misdemeanor to have airbags, not, as Representative Nolan said, in their vehicle properly placed, but for anybody to have airbags that are not that have been removed from a vehicle. I think there is no disagreement with this on any part, and I hope we'll open a work session and move it to the floor.
And this would allow someone to have two canisters that they could install in their own car, but not more than that, or it'd become an offense.
They can have any number in their own car as long as it's in their car. I mean, as long as it's
installed
in their car.
Right.
Carrying them around would be a problem.
Representative Garrard.
Representative Greenlee, on the original bill, there was a fiscal impact from Department of Human Services to about $46,000.
There's no fiscal on this from anybody.
No fiscal now. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll close the hearing on House Bill 2507 and open a work session on House Bill 2507.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'd move the adoption of the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2507.
Representative Jensen moves the 2507 with amendments. Adoption of the amendment, I'm sorry. All right, any discussion? None. Can we have a call of the roll?
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Yes. Excuse.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And I do a majority of the vote. We have passed 2507 with amendments.
No, Mr. Chair, I'll make.
I'm sorry. This is the amendment. I'm all confused today. Have a one of your days. Okay, that's the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we pass House Bill 2507 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Good. Any question?
There was initially a fiscal, and I think it was with a referral to the Ways and Means.
Yeah.
I think there was initially a referral to Ways and Means. In which case, Mr. Chair, we need to take care of the referral to Ways and Means before we try to.
I'd be happy to change my motion. We tried this once before, and it got sent back to us. But with no fiscal, I would think that there's.
But the speaker still has to sign off.
Okay. Yeah. What we thought?
I'd take that as a friendly amendment, and the motion now is that I move to pass House Bill 2507 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Request for rescission.
Request.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem we had with the last bill was is that what I found out was we are supposed to request and receive permission from the Speaker's office to remove the referral before we take action on a motion to pass it out to the floor, and that's what got us up on the last bill. So I guess at this point in time, if you would like to direct me to request from the Speaker's office that we have the referral removed, I can bring that back to you as soon as we receive word of that. And then we could properly take the motion to pass it out.
I'm sorry, I've gone through all the documents. I can't find any referral.
There is no subsequent referral.
None of the preliminary staff summaries would suggest that there's a referral.
We need to see the pink sheet.
I look on the computer.
The original a preliminary staff measure summary indicated no fiscal, no revenue impact. I see.
No,
may have a fiscal impact. Yeah, it does say that.
Yeah.
But there's no indication of a referral to those means.
No, that would be in the Speaker's referral to this committee.
Mm-hmm. Don't they go on the preliminary?
Yeah, no, the green sheet that came with the bill says subsequent referral, yes, raising name.
Uh-oh.
So,
okay.
So it does have
a... So then, Mr. Chair, do you need a motion to ask staff to request that that be rescinded before we move this?
Don't we want to take it to raising names?
It's got no fiscal.
It doesn't have a fiscal.
It has no fiscal.
It should not go to raising names.
Then we want to get... permission from the...
I think Representative Nolan's change of motion would...
accomplish
be,
that?
Would be
and
adequate.
And perhaps accomplish it without having to hold another work session.
Without having...
Would you restate your motion?
I'm Mr. Chair, then, to clarify the motion, it is that we pass House Bill 2507 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request rescission of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Good.
Mr. Chair, I believe, if I can clarify on that, I believe if the permission is rejected, then it just automatically,
then it just automatically goes to Ways and Means.
Right.
Okay.
And at least that...
My only concern is that that's the exact wording of the motion we did last time on that bill, and when I went to the Speaker's office and asked, they said, no, you should have come to us before you did that motion. That's all I'm... That's what they advised me last time. And so
it's your hand that's going to get slapped, Mr. Chair.
I think we better go back and get the right answer, Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I believe that meeting was a public hearing only. This is a work session.
No.
We were not.
No,
that was a work session.
It was a work session
on another bill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's try
and get around real quick.
Is it possible? Maybe we could recess.
Yeah, let's do that.
Make this happen now.
I'll call a recess of the committee.
Okay.
Do you want to check with Ramona?
Yeah.
House Joint Resolution number 3. And first I'll call Liz Frankel.
Thank you very much. I'm Liz Frankel, and I am representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government in order to build better communities statewide. Over the years, the League has opposed stringency legislation, that is, legislation which restricts the flexibility of the state to deal with matters significantly affecting or affected by the state. This resolution proposes limiting the authority of state agencies regarding control of greenhouse gas emissions. The League of Women Voters of the United States, which is our national organization, also has strong positions in support of measures to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. H.R. 3, in its introduction, expresses negative arguments to the control of greenhouse gas emissions. The resolution does not acknowledge the final report of the Governor's Advisory Group report, Oregon's Strategy for Greenhouse Gas Reduction. The report recommends, 1, establishing new greenhouse gas reduction goals for the state, 2, creating a task force to develop a plan for implementing stricter emission standards for vehicles, 3, setting up a work group to develop a carbon dioxide reduction schedule for utilities, 4, directing the Department of Energy to create an energy-saving campaign, and 5, establishing a campaign to increase renewable energies and biofuel production. This strategy represents a credible and laudable approach. In fairness to the sponsors of H.R. 3, the task force report was not released until March 24th. Which was after the introduction of H.R. 3 on March 14th. However, the problems related to greenhouse gases are problems affecting the state. The League strongly encourages the Environment Committee to either reject H.R. 3 or to write it to be more in concert with the Governor's Task Force strategy. And I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Sprinkle? All right. Thank you very much, Liz. Call Daryl Fuller.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller for the Oregon Auto Dealers Association, and I'm here to support the resolution. It had not been, frankly, a resolution that was real high on my agenda of things to come and testify in favor of until a couple of days ago when Jeff Mapes from the Oregonian called me about a New York Times article that quoted the governor as saying that he was going to adopt California emission standards in the state of Oregon by rule by the end of this year. That kind of caught me by surprise. It caught a lot of us by surprise because all of our conversations with the governor's office prior to this, as a result of his global warming task force over the interim, was that he was going to appoint another task force specifically to look at this issue, and that over the interim we'd continue to mull over whether or not the adoption of California emission standards were appropriate for Oregon or not. He apparently has changed course and has gone from if to when, and at least according to the New York Times, established the when to be before the end of this year. His office has backtracked from that a little bit. They've indicated that they don't think they can get it done by the end of this year. But his office did reconfirm that the governor's position was a win and not an if, and it appears to be as a more of an urgent matter than we had been led to believe. We think that we ought to have a discussion about whether or not to adopt California standards in the state of Oregon. We also believe that discussion rightly belongs in the legislature, not in an administrative rules hearing where the people who are elected to make those sort of policy decisions don't have a vote. I believe that administrative rules are designed to implement policy decisions that this body makes, not designed to make huge changes in policy decisions and implement them in and of themselves. So I would hope that that on this and other bills and resolutions that are going through the process, that the legislature would consider whether or not you support the adoption of the California standards or not. Is that a decision that ought to be made by administrative rule, or is that one that you guys ought to have the ability to review and determine as a legislative body? We certainly believe that that is a policy decision that ought to be made by the legislature and not, again, through administrative rules in an administrative agency. And so anything that this body can do to encourage the governor to use a legislative process in making that deliberation, we would welcome. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? I will say I had a good conversation with Mr. Cogswell from the governor's office yesterday, and he does claim that the New York Times has done it again. I hope that's true, that they were inaccurate in their reporting, although, and they have a pretty good record of doing that in recent past. But couldn't agree more that I think this is an issue that should go through the legislature. I liked your statement of the fact that rules should be carrying out the policy of the legislature rather than establishing new policy, although I'm sure at times it's been done the other way. Representative Berger.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, your statement raised a question in my mind, and you might know the answer to it. Does the governor's staff believe that he has the authority to do what he was misquoted as claiming that he wanted to do?
The impression I got was that they do.
Okay.
But the impression I got also was that they more than likely would convene a task force that would work on it hard and furious before doing anything, and that might be before the end of the year, but might not.
Mr. Chair, Daryl Fuller again, if I might help to answer Representative Barnhart's question, because I sent an email to Andy Ginsberg at DEQ. asking specifically that question, and I don't have a copy of his email with me, but he did cite the statutory authority that they do use, and apparently the when the state of Oregon started doing auto emissions testing, they wrote the statutory language broadly so that the Department of Environmental Quality could adjust what DEQ was testing for, and that's why you have the enhanced test in the metro area. You don't have the enhanced test in Portland. DEQ can determine what areas need to be tested, which cars need to be tested. So the language itself, and I haven't checked the statutory reference that DEQ provided me, but it apparently tends to be pretty broad authority to adopt any rules regarding auto emissions in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Please.
Agencies may adopt rules that implement policies established by the legislature. They're not authorized to adopt rules that contradict with statutory measures that have been passed by the legislature. They have no authority to override any action of the legislature.
That's right. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Nolan, I certainly would agree with that, and I would argue, and I'm not an attorney, so whether this argument would hold up in court, I would certainly be of the opinion that an administrative agency adopting rules that were provided in that authority that were never contemplated when the authority was granted seems to me a rather long stretch. I mean, when DEQ was given the authority to do this, the notion of California emission standards or adopting standards like California's was not something that was, I think, contemplated by the legislature in providing that ability to DEQ to adjust the emissions testing that was going on in the state of Oregon they were creating at that time.
If I may follow up on that, I don't disagree with the point you've made, but my understanding of the reason that we have citizen commissions, citizen boards, a delegation of that kind of authority, which is explicitly tied to the standards, goals, and other language that's codified in statute, is that both the volume, if nothing else, of work that needs to go on is enormous and would grind this place to a halt. If we think we're overloaded now, imagine if we had to do all the work of 200 and some odd citizen commissions at the same time that we did our legislative work. But also because those boards and commissions are populated with people specifically selected because of their expertise in the area that they are responsible for implementing our statutes on. I think for the most part, that system works well. And in a few instances where it doesn't, we have the authority to tell them, nope, you've overstepped your boundary. We want to take that back, and we can statutorily change their rules. They cannot, by rules, change our statutes.
Mr. Chair and Madam Vice Chair, I intend to have that very conversation with each of you.
Yeah, good.
Yes, before we do, maybe that's why the initiative several years ago that beneficially relieved the legislature of reviewing everything and making sure that everything is correct passed with such a wide margin.
That's what?
And that's the reason it's
passed the peak.
It failed.
Yeah, that's the reason it's never been enacted.
I'm sorry.
It failed.
And it kept us from having to do it. It was kind of a negative.
Yes. negative
I would argue for what action we'd take on this. I'd like to request the chair as legislative counsel for an opinion on the specific issue as to whether the governor would be acting within his authority to do that. I think it would be helpful for us to know specifically that issue, at least as far as legislative counsel's opinion, understanding that that is not a binding opinion on the state of Oregon, that only comes from the court or from the attorney general, but I don't want to pay for an AG's opinion.
Representative Bernard, then Ben Carrard.
Oh,
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. If the governor has statutory authority, or some agency does on the at the governor's request has statutory authority to write the California standards into a rule, into an administrative rule, a couple of issues. One, my first comment would be, well, whether it intended to or not, the legislature did speak on that when it passed the broad statute, because usually we only adopt broad statutes when we know that there are things that are going to develop in the future that we can't contemplate, and we want them to, the executive branch to have some flexibility. Second, this resolution, assuming it passed, would have no effect at all, because the governor enforces it follows the law, and this wouldn't be part of the law. I mean, it can be a pious statement, but it would have no effect at all on what the governor or any of his or any of the state agencies or organs might do. So I guess the best we can do to answer this question is to do what Representative Jensen suggested. Because I don't think this has any effect at all.
Representative Gray.
I was going to nitpick, Mr. Chair, on Representative Nolan's statement, but I think I'll reconsider it. Not.
Wise move.
Mr. Chair.
All right. I think hearing no further questions at this time. Thank you, Daryl. We have Dave Moskowitz, if he'll come forward. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Chairman Anderson, members of the committee. My name is David Moskowitz. I'm with a group called the Wild Salmon Center. We're a conservation group based in Portland. We work on salmon conservation issues across the whole Pacific, which may make you wonder why am I testifying on this House resolution. And there's some really good reasons for it. But first, before I talk about salmon and global warming, just to comment on the discussion you just had, which is very interesting. The authority to regulate air quality in Oregon is through DEQ, which is delegated to them by the EPA under the Clean Air Act. It's a federal law. And the governor and DEQ have absolute authority to regulate in this area. I would recommend, I think that Representative Jensen's request for an Attorney General's opinion specifically on the effects and the delegation would be very informative and probably have maybe a better result and more informative than this particular resolution. But the authority is absolutely there. And it ties into why the Wild Salmon Center is interested in this resolution. This resolution, in a sense, is an attempt to limit what the state would do about global warming, saying this is an international issue, it's a big national issue, we should let the national or international forums set the rules and the guidelines for reducing greenhouse gases. But if you look historically, particularly in the United States, the states and our neighbor to the south, California, have taken a leadership role on Clean Air Act implementation through emissions from cars and many other aspects. States have regularly led the way for the nation, and Oregon's been a leader on many fronts in other areas. This would potentially and unreasonably hinder creative solutions to the issues. And that's one reason we do not think this is necessarily a wise resolution to pass. Specifically to salmon, the research that is emerging on the effects of greenhouse gases and global warming on aquatic ecosystems is alarming. A lot of the most important research is coming from Oregon State University and the University of Washington. The Wild Salmon Center just co-sponsored an international salmon conference that was held in Anchorage, Alaska last week, and we heard from many experts on the subject. potential effects of greenhouse gases on our climate in the Pacific Northwest is it's happening, and the effects are showing the potential effects of increasing the temperatures and changing our precipitation patterns could have really devastating economic impacts on our fisheries, on agriculture, on hydropower production, and domestic water use. The connection between greenhouse gases and this and the natural environment, particularly the aquatic environment, really poses a potential great harm. And with far the losses that could be suffered and that could happen in your district with salmon fishing on the Rogue or on the Umatilla or the John Day, the potential losses could be dramatic, and they would outweigh immediate economic consequences to whether it be industrial manufacturing or autos that have to be changed to have different emission levels. Those are short-term costs, and clearly they would affect the economy, but the long-term effects of ignoring this problem just shift the burden to those who come after us. The Wild Salmon Center would really urge the committee to consider focusing on how to address, how the state can best address, use the Oregon example of doing things kind of on the cutting edge, and look at greenhouse gases and look at what the states can do. And tying the hands of state agencies isn't the best way to do that, in our opinion. So we appreciate the time, and we'd be happy to answer any questions. And by the way, I am a lawyer, but I'm probably not any more well-suited than Mr. Fuller to speak definitively on these issues, but I'm certainly always welcome to share my opinion.
No questions? Representative Borghardt.
Thank you. We were talking before you came out about state law, not about federal law. You raised a new wrinkle. And I think what you said was that under a delegation of authority from the federal government, the state agency would have the authority to adopt the California regulations about automobiles. Is that what you said?
Yes.
That's not quite the form of words you used, but I'm wondering if that's what you meant by that.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. So, if I could, Mr. Chair, so it would not be exercising state authority. It would be exercising authority delegated by the federal government, and it would be operating under the federal statute.
Well, the Clean Air Act is the that fills the field in this area, and certain states have been delegated the authority to implement federal law. So, in some states, there is not a DEQ.
Right.
You know, the EPA regulates. In Oregon, the EPA regulates on Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, Clean Air Act. And it's under that delegation that DEQ could regulate in this area. And so, therefore, I think that is why the governor believes he could take action.
Right, through the agency with the delegated authority.
That's correct.
It's actually EPA that would be.
Right, and in fact, it is the Federal Environmental Protection Agency acting through its delegate, the state agency.
Well, I'm not sure it's quite. It would be DEQ if you're working on, if you're setting auto emissions in Oregon. DEQ is the action agency.
Right.
The authority comes, their authority comes through the federal law, which EPA administers.
Okay.
So that it's the EPA, but the EPA wouldn't be the implementing authority necessarily. They might be the enforcing authority once a state law was set.
May I follow up?
Certainly.
So following up this line of reasoning, then, assuming that what you're saying is correct, and I don't know, but I'm assuming that it is for the sake of this discussion, if the legislature were to pass a law that said, make up something, that we took a position contrary to what the EPA had done, the EPA would have the capacity simply to withdraw its authority from the DEQ, enforce the laws directly in Oregon, and adopt some rule that was directly contrary to state law if it chose to do that. I think that's what you're really saying when you say they filled up the area.
Well, when there's been a delegation, that means DQ has a certain obligation to perform at a certain level of standards, whether it's implementing the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Air Act. So there's the... And if DEQ, if the legislature were to... I think these issues come about when the legislature may reduce funding because if the agency is unable to implement the act, it calls into question whether the delegation has any force.
Right.
So if Oregon, if the legislature passed a law that said Oregon will not set auto emissions beyond the California standards or up to the California standards, it's possible that that law wouldn't be found to violate that delegation. It just depends on what level. States do have the ability on their own, though, to set higher standards, and that's why you have California taking the action that it regularly takes.
Okay. Thank you. So despite the fact that the area is so-called filled up, we still have, there still is a little bit left over for the states to do if they want to.
I think that's probably an accurate statement. I'm not an expert on the Clean Air Act, and there are some differences between how the Clean Water Act and Clean Air Act are administered.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think I would much rather have a federal agency come in and come down on us than for our governor to look like he's going around the legislature. That's the problem I see. Representative Jensen.
I just want to add two bits. It's not a question. But I concur with Mr. Moskowitz's definitions of the legality issue here. And I think if you give me an hour or so, I could find a number of examples where that, in fact, has already taken place in the state of Oregon. Just that the gray, the white hair pulls some of the whatever it is out of the brain and doesn't let it function as fast as it used to, or at least as I say it used to. I think one of the things that would also play into will play into any kind of a legal definition on this will be the memorandum of understanding that the Department of Environmental Quality has with the EPA. I concur on the legal aspects that he's talking about, and your understanding. I'm not a lawyer, so. But I think the one thing that I'm unable to make any real sort of statements on is I don't know all of the things that are in that memorandum of understanding and what the obligations, responsibilities, and conditions are. And yes, to Representative Barnhart, if the memorandum of understanding in the interpretation of the Environmental Protection Agency is breached, then the Environmental Protection Agency has the legal authority to come in and take over. And whether that's good or bad, I mean, depends on which side of the coin we're on and what sort of action A is taking and B is taking. And so that's the reason that I was asking for the opinion on this. That's I'm not in disagreement, Mr. Chair, with where you're wanting to go or what the issues are. I think for Mr. Moskowitz, I believe that it's not just that we're saying we're turning all of this, that this is a global or an international issue, and or it's a bigger issue than the state and it's a national issue. I think within the within the framework of this resolution that we have, is still the recognition of the state having ability to do some things and a responsibility to do some things. The question that I think we're getting at is, or should be getting at, is whether or not that this type of action should come through the legislature. Not that we're shirking our duty, if it's a duty that, you know, we're talking about. And that the legislature should just defer to the executive department, you know, in this type of case, when we have some responsibilities as a legislative body as far as policy in the state, regardless of what policy we come up with. We got a lot of policies that we've had over the years that some of us agree with and some of us don't agree with.
Well, I think the original intent, I know the original intent was to bring forward the fact that there is some dispute within the state as to whether the action of the governor's advisory group is the whole scientific body or not. And that because states all over the country are trying to say, because the federal government has opted out of greenhouse gas debate to a degree and said we will not sign Kyoto, that it's not wise for the states to try and circumvent that. But this was just an attempt to determine if there are two sides or if it's only one side on which the governor comes down. Thank you much for your testimony.
May I make one comment in response? Mr. Chair, thank you. You might consider, I know that the collective legislators are representatives of your body will meet with your colleagues in other states, and I would recommend that this issue become a hotter topic among the western states, and that a delegation from Oregon might team up with some of the other western states to really address this, because the administration right now is moving slowly on these issues, and they've allowed a debate about the science on both sides of the issue to emerge. It may be that the states could get ahead of the curve by actually taking some collective action that would make it less painful should the United States actually get on board with really the rest of the world on this issue. And maybe the states could lead the way. I would urge whoever your representatives are with some of the other western state legislators to consider bringing this issue up a notch, because it's an important one. In any state that has salmon, it would be important actions to take preventative steps.
I'd certainly be open to any information you can give me along that line.
Okay.
You know, when you consider that there's 191 countries and only 37 signed on, and many of those because they are going to benefit from it, there is some real dispute in my mind and certainly in the minds of many others that was not a bad decision by the Clinton administration when they opted out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will, without any further testimony, we will close the hearing on H.R. 3, and I will request a motion on LC draft number 3599.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee introduce LC draft 3599 as a House memorial honoring the legislative service of former Representative Cecil Johnson.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any objections? We'll accept that as moved and passed.
Yep.
And with that, we have no further...
We do.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, if I might, members of the committee, the Speaker, unfortunately, is engaged in a series of meetings this afternoon and could not render us an immediate decision on a request to rescind that referral. The conclusion that her staff and I came to was that the Chair would provide her with a memo either later this afternoon or first thing tomorrow morning, asking that the rescission...
I think I need to open the hearing again. Open the work session. I'll open the work session again on House Bill 2507.
Their request was that we send a memo to her office as a committee asking that the subsequent referral be rescinded, and her staff indicated that we could go ahead and place the House bill on our agenda as early as next Tuesday under a work session, so that if we receive her response within the next day or two, we could go ahead and take final action on the bill on Tuesday.
With that understanding, Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my motion.
Thank you.
Do you need a motion to do that?
No, I don't think so.
The chair can do it on his own. Yeah. Good. Okay.
And we will close the work session on House Bill 2507, and we are adjourned. Thank you.